from the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas. I am your host, Christopher Calloway, for Creator Talks, the interview show for comic book aficionados. My guest is Samuel George London, a comic book writer and podcast host based in the UK. We discuss why he developed his relatively recent interest in comic books and how he conceived and launched his popular Victorian space adventure series, Milford Green. But the focus of our conversation will be his latest work being published through Action Lab Comics, The S Factor. It is a four-part series launching in June about an underappreciated superhero sidekick, Gray Fox, who decides to rebrand himself through a new reality TV series for superheroes called The S Factor. 12 superheroine contestants must fight for his affection. Samuel shares which show inspired The S Factor, as well as his own personal experience taking part in a reality TV show. His insight into the machinations and manipulations by associate producers to heighten emotions and tensions among contestants was fertile ground for the development of The S Factor. Samuel also goes behind the scenes of making The S Factor, the good fortune that led to the book deal with Action Lab Comics, and the artist of the series, Chris Panda. Samuel reveals the series' rags-to-riches story and why he selected Chris to illustrate it. Samuel is also the host of Comics for the Apocalypse. We talk about his imaginative interview podcast, one in which ye old host even made an appearance. But don't let that stop you, though. It's well worth your time to give his podcast a listen. And as we conclude our discussion, I ask Samuel my final 9 questions, which include when he took a risk, his island book, recommended reading for comic book newbies, and all about that missed opportunity. Now, please join me in welcoming writer and podcaster Samuel George London, here now on Creator Talks. Samuel, welcome to Creator Talks.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here.
You live in Winchester, UK. I've been binging a lot of Rick Steves, Europe, the best of Europe, and I don't think he's ever covered Winchester. What's he missing out on? What is he not seeing?
Well, what he's not seeing is, say, Winchester used to be the capital of England before London. And the reason for that is because it's the resting place of King Alfred the Great, who was one of our first monarchs here in England. So it's got a very rich history here. It's got one of the oldest colleges in the country. Winchester College, and it's just got a very rich history of monarchs, Roman history as well, because the Romans initially settled here back in the day. Mm-hmm. Before England became England. And it's just a lovely place, really. We've got a load of countryside near us. We're fairly near the coast, the New Forest, which is like a national park here in the south of England. Is just on our doorstep as well. So he's definitely missing out. So he needs to do his next episode on that.
It sounds great. And you're fairly close to France too. You're just a swim across the channel and there you are.
Yeah, exactly. So the ferry that goes over to France is like 40 minutes away from where I live. So it's really handy for me because my wife is French. So when we're allowed to travel again, then we'll be getting the ferry over.
So you must speak French as well. You must be bilingual.
I try my best. And I tell you what, so I've been with my wife for, coming up 9 years this year. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I've certainly got better and better. But the thing is that I'm still not as good as my 4-year-old daughter, who is just amazing. She's properly bilingual, and it's just incredible to see that she can just switch between the two languages, just speak full sentences in both. And it's incredible.
I'm always amazed by folks in other countries, especially in Europe, where they speak multiple languages because they're near various borders. And they're not so isolated like over here in the States. They just pick it up naturally because they're interacting with people of other languages all the time. And it's in writing, it's on street signs. You can spend time there very easily. I mean, you must have been to France probably several times now.
Oh, several. Yeah. And I know all across Europe as well. Greece, Germany,
oh, man.
Spain, Portugal.
Those are all on my bucket list right there.
I know, yeah. It kind of sucks because obviously it's right on our doorstep and it's an easy holiday for us. But I have frequented the US quite a few times myself. I, in fact, used to be a snowboard instructor.
Really?
Yeah. and I used to instruct a mountain resort called Akemo in Vermont.
Oh, okay. Vermont, yes.
Yeah, and also at Winter Park in Colorado. Mm-hmm. As well, I've spent some time in the US, and US is as exotic to us as, you know, Europe is to the US. So, you know, don't feel bad or anything.
Well, Vermont is lovely. I've been there many times, and I've been to Colorado too. It's a big country.
Very big country. Very varying as well. So that's the beauty of the US too.
Yeah, I used to live on the East Coast, so it's like, well, let's go to this state or that state, and, you know, no big deal. Here, it's like, oh, let's just drive up Nevada a bit, and oh, no, that's 4 hours away. Oh, because the states are huge out here.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so funny. So my relatives are up north, in the north of England, mm-hmm. which is about 4 hours away, which isn't very far in the US, but you're almost bordering on Scotland. when you get up to there, which is 4 hours, so the distances in the US compared to the UK are just incredible.
A man about the world traveling, how did you get into comics?
Yeah, now that's a bit of a funny story. So it was about 2016, I think, so coming up 5 years now, that, like a lot of people my age and inclination, started watching The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it. And then I found out through one of the interviews that I found on YouTube that it was based on a comic book. I thought, wow, that's interesting. So I decided, right, I'm going to look this up. Saw that, you know, it was probably at about, probably in the region of like 130. Mm-hmm. I think something like that, issue 130. And so there are actually at least two compendiums that were out by then. So I bought both compendiums, used ones. So got them fairly cheap, I think like about £20 each, which is, you know, about $35 or something like that,
yeah.
Which is a steal really, to get kind of, you know, 48 issues yeah. of a comic straight off the bat. And I just demolished it. You know, I was just like, this is amazing. I can't believe that I've never come across this before. Because like most people in the UK, when I was younger, I read the Beano and the Dandy and a little bit of Sonic the Comic and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I never really fully got into comics, particularly Marvel and DC. I never got into them when I was younger. But thankfully now with this renaissance for me, after having read The Walking Dead, I demolished Invincible as well, going straight off the back of Robert Kirkman. Mm-hmm. And then I just discovered the rest of the comic community, from more small press titles to a lot of the Marvel and DC classics as well. And yeah, that's kind of my inception. So I've only really been into comics this past 5 years, and it was 2018 that I decided, I wonder what it would take to write a comic, because I can't draw. I can do stick men very well, mm-hmm. but that's about it. And so I decided, yeah, what does it take to write a comic? And so I read an absolute ton of blogs on writing comics, and as I was doing that, because my mind kind of works on really in the background, on ideas, we were actually walking in the South Downs here, which is another national park near us, and I kind of had this vision of an alien spacecraft crash landing right in front of me whilst we're walking through these hills. And in actual fact, to connect some dots, it was actually because we were walking near where they filmed Downton Abbey.
Oh, okay.
So the house that they filmed there is near us as well. And we were walking in the hills that are kind of surrounding that. And yeah, I had this vision of an alien spacecraft crash landing. I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. Didn't think too much about it. But then a couple of weeks later, we went to this local museum called Milestones in a town called Basingstoke. And that's basically a mock Victorian village in a warehouse, essentially. Okay. Just walking around there, you know, doing what you do in a museum, but it's a mock Victorian village, so it kind of feels like you're kind of immersed into Victorian life. Then I had these visions of some aliens walking around this Victorian village, and then kind of that idea of that alien spacecraft crash landing in the hills came back to me, and I started to connect the dots in terms of how to create a story. And that's when I came up with my first story, Milford Green, which is a Victorian space adventure series. About 3 months later, I had a script, found an artist through DeviantArt called Michael Hankinen, that I've worked on many projects with now, and put it on Kickstarter, reached I think it was about 140% funded in that period, and then haven't looked back since. I've just kind of been trying to create stories ever since because I've just thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's amazing. Right out the gate, you had a successful Kickstarter. Not everybody that can do that.
No, that was very fortunate. That was very fortunate, I think. I think it was really kind of a happy set of circumstances. I had a relatively fresh idea, I think. And then also at the same time, I planned it around a comic con called True Believers here in the UK. And so I had it launched 3 days before that con, and I'd printed off like a load of flyers as well and handed them out at the comic con as well. So I tried to marry up all of those promotional opportunities. And I got a little bit of coverage on Nerdist even, which was really fortunate. And I think Mark Miller even retweeted it. I managed to get a response from him. And I think it was a happy set of circumstances. And that kind of set me off.
Targeted marketing and advertising. Look at you. And you even found a social media influencer right off the bat, too. Well, very good.
Thanks, man.
That wasn't a fluke either. First of all, I did have a chance to read the first issue. So I'm behind a lot of my reading. And I looked at it, I read it, and I turned to the missus. I said, you know what? This is something I really would enjoy and I did enjoy. I said, you know, you've got Victorian era, you have space adventure, you've got H.G. Wells, it's everything I like, you know. This is actually quite good. And that wasn't a fluke because you did another one after that. You had the S Factor, and we're going to talk about that. So folks, take it from us, don't Google it, because when I did, something else came up about erotic pole dancing and empowerment.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that might be something new. So that might be post me coming up with that title.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't Google it. Well, search for it on Comixology. That's fine.
Right. And right. Honey, I'm doing research. Yeah, sure you are. No, honest to God.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, Chris. It's all right. No, it was clean. It was a clean site. It was just, this is very empowering. You can learn how to dance and, you know, very nice. It was tastefully done.
Yeah, there you go. Nice.
But that was the S Factor. That was back in 2018. You had a Kickstarter, and that was successful. And your book's artist, Chris Panda, a French artist living in Berlin, Germany. So there you go, tapping into your European neighbors there. And he started working, I guess, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. So like you, he's kind of fairly new and also very successful because he has done work through IDW on Micronauts, Transformer crossovers, and ROM comic. Who is Chris Panda to you, and how did you get him to work on this Kickstarter?
Yeah, so with the S Factor, this was something that, yeah, I came up with after the success of Milford Green. And I was really hoping that it would be my next successful Kickstarter. But what was really interesting is that the actual Kickstarter for it that I launched in September 2018, I think, it actually failed. That one. Which was rather interesting. However, even though I didn't reach the goal, Action Lab picked it up, basically. So that was very fortunate. Before that, obviously, coming across Chris. So I'd come up with this idea because, well, my wife was watching this drama series called Unreal. And I don't know which network it's on. It's an American program. It's about a bachelor type program, but it's more focused on behind the scenes and kind of the backstabbing that goes on. Now, my wife had started watching it and kind of, as you do, you watch over her shoulder and then you go, oh, actually, that's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I started watching it with her. And yeah, I was enthralled by the behind the scenes element of all of this and kind of the psychology that goes on behind all of this and where things start off well, meaning they can end up be very kind of evil as well and things like that, like kind of the journey that people go through. But putting my comic hat on, I thought, what would this be like, but with superheroes? That's how the S Factor idea came to me. And for anybody that, yeah, obviously hasn't come across the S Factor yet, it's essentially about the dark underbelly of a superhero dating reality TV show. And going back to trying to find Chris, I was looking around for people that did a real kind of classic superhero look, you know, very clean cut and things. And yeah, just literally looking on Twitter, on kind of all of the portfolio day hashtags and things like that, came across Chris, and I messaged him through his website, and he was available. And we got to work, basically, kind of coming up with all of the characters from Dark Fox, who's kind of the Batman equivalent in this world, but she's a tea heiress in London. And then her sidekick is Grey Fox. And you read this in the first issue that he becomes very disgruntled and he feels underappreciated and decides that he wants to rebrand himself. And fortunately, there's a dating reality TV show that's happy to help him rebrand as the Symbol. And that's where the S Factor, the show, comes from. And yeah, no, as I say, we tried it as a Kickstarter, wasn't that successful. But thankfully, the submissions editor at Action Lab had actually backed the project.
And
when it failed, she approached me and said, you should submit this to us. And I was like, sure thing. And submitted it. And yeah, they were happy to publish it.
Wow, that's phenomenal. I can't imagine, you know, I mean, just think about the people, they do fail and they have to go and try again or try to retool it. And man, lightning strikes twice for you. But the quality was there, though, because looking at Chris Panda's artwork, you know, the way you described it, yes, it's a very clean line, like the thicker ink lines, very classic comic book. Now that makes complete sense why there is an international team of heroines that are vying for his affection to be able to date Grey Fox, because you've been around the world. So naturally, you tap into all these different superheroines from around the world. And it has that kind of, like you said, the backstabbing and the conniving and the weeping when things don't work out. Like, really? You're crying over this? But have you watched one of these shows? Of course they're crying over not winning or not getting the date. Exactly. And I don't know if it's the person they're crying over, or it's just that they lost.
Yeah, and it's also, so what's really interesting, so I did a load of research on reality TV shows for this as well. I'm trying to get into the psyche of both the people behind it and also the people that watch it as well. And so what's really interesting is that the studies that have been done into the people that watch this is that the type of people that watch these types of reality TV shows are more likely to have emotional outbreaks than people that don't watch them. And they think that that's likely because the type of emotional situations that they get into in these shows are very heightened. You know, they're exaggerated scenarios almost, aren't they? Because the producers want to try and create as much drama as possible and unexpected drama as well in order to elicit emotional responses from the contestants. And that's why a lot of them end up crying, because they would have created a scenario where they would have been under extra stress. You know, they've got cameras on them. They're around people that they don't know that well as well. And so there's kind of all of these crazy circumstances that makes all of their emotional responses very exaggerated.
This is edited too, so we don't see a lot of the pressure they're under. We're just like, why did they react so emotionally? But a lot of that's on the cutting room floor.
Oh, 100%. And then also it's in the production assistant's preparation as well. So when you see like a lineup of women on The Bachelor waiting to hear what the bachelor's going to do. What you wouldn't have seen is that they would have probably been standing there for maybe 10, 15 minutes or something like that, waiting for the bachelor to get into position and things like that. But the production assistants would have been talking to the contestants, asking them questions that would perhaps make them think of the situation in a different way as well. And so in order to potentially create drama in front of the cameras, basically. So we don't see any of that. And unless you've actually kind of experienced being on a reality TV show, you don't necessarily know that's exactly what happens.
That's fascinating.
And what's really interesting, so go back to kind of happy circumstances, I was actually on a dating reality TV show once in my university days, which is really funny. I know. It's not quite The Bachelor. It was this show where they had a celebrity spot and I was in the studio audience, and basically they had these one hit wonder twins that were singers, I don't know, like in 2000 and well in the 2000s, sorry, called the Cheeky Girls, a set of Romanian twins that did this song called "We Are the Cheeky Girls, You Are the Cheeky Boys." It's very silly, but you know, they sold some records and they got semi-famous. But anyway, so years later, they end up on this dating show. I'm in the audience and they ask any audience members to stand up to potentially dance with the Cheeky Girls. I stand up, I get chosen. I go onto the studio floor. The Cheeky Girls are blindfolded and there are like a few of us as well, a few guys, and the Cheeky Girls dance. Well, we dance with the Cheeky Girls whilst they're blindfolded. And then they choose based off of our dancing ability with them blindfolded. I get chosen and I get to go on a date with one of these Cheeky Girls, right? The date is like on a coastal town. It's kind of like the equivalent of like Atlantic City. Essentially, this thing. It's just a hilarious time. But I had a bit of an insight into how these types of programs work, basically, because you're waiting around a lot of the time. The production assistants are whispering stuff in your ear to try and make you do things that you don't necessarily want to do. And you feel under pressure in front of the camera and things like that. I've got kind of a base knowledge on how these types of things work. And so I tried to really bake that into the S Factor as much as I could. I hope that it kind of somewhat paid off and kind of shows the type of things that go into these shows.
So this is going to come out through Action Lab now. It's going to be 4 issues, and it starts in June.
Yeah, that's right.
Definitely well worth checking out. I've read some of the Action Lab comics, and this is going to be, I think, one of the best ones I've read in a long time through Action Lab. So I know I have some listeners who enjoy Action Lab comics quite a bit, and this is one to add to the list. Tell your comic shop, don't even worry about the code. Just say, I want this, and they'll find it for you. They'll order it for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're good 100%. About
that. Yeah, I'm really excited to see it get out to the world and eager to hear what people think.
Well, now it's time for the 9 questions I ask all my guests to learn more about you, Samuel.
Excellent.
So, what do you like to do for recreation?
So recreation-wise, I'm an avid exerciser, and specifically boxing for the most part.
Nice.
So I've got a boxing a punch bag in my garden that hangs on my chin-up bar. And yeah, I beat that to a pulp, basically. That's my current pastime at the moment. Of course, I'm a comic fan as well, so I try to read comics as much as I can, and you know, writing comics for me is almost a hobby and a pastime in itself, really. I don't do it full time or anything like that. It's kind of spare time at the moment, although I'm hoping to aspire to potentially do it, you know, at least part time would be great one day. And then other than that, and I don't know if this counts as like a pastime, but I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm very interested in philosophy. I'm always listening to a podcast and things.
Now you have a podcast. That's
yes.
Please.
Yeah, that is another one of my hobbies.
Yes. Please.
And you were amazingly on my podcast, so thank you again for coming on that.
My pleasure. It's a very interesting concept. Just asking people these questions, you give them a scenario, an apocalyptic situation, and it's not always the same one. And thank you so much for picking the worst of the world for me. Where there's no power, no power. But it's different each time. So the person has to deal with a different situation. It could be zombies. It could be a plague. It could be a virus. It's always a little different. And we learn more about the people through that scenario and the questions that you ask them. So it's a really, really good concept.
Thank you. Yeah. It's called Comics for the Apocalypse, if anybody hasn't come across it yet. So just search for that. And it came out of wanting to do a podcast, but trying to think of how else could I do a comics podcast. And I was listening to a radio show here in the UK that's been going for like 60 years called Desert Island Discs. And that's on BBC Radio 4. And they essentially interview guests about what music tracks on a disc they'd take to a desert island with them. And through that process of what tracks that they choose, and they kind of try and get it in chronological order in terms of kind of the type of music that they would have been into when they were younger to what they've discovered more recently. You kind of find out about the person through that interview process. And so I tried to create that concept through Comics for the Apocalypse, and I think I've accomplished it. People seem to really enjoy it. So yeah, thanks for the shout out, Chris.
Next question. What was your favorite birthday and why?
I'll tell you what, my favorite birthday was probably when I think I was 14. I had a go-karting party and it was just all of my best mates. There was about 10 of us. I don't know if, and I can't imagine that they did let me win, but I won the whole day, because you do like these races, these one-on-one races. And then you finally get to a final type thing in a Grand Prix. And I managed to win out of everybody. But it was just a really fun day. I just remember having such fun in the go-karts and, winning at the end of the day. So I was happy.
Around the same age, what posters or pictures did you have on your bedroom wall?
Yes. So I had a Super Mario poster on my wall. I had a Sonic the Hedgehog poster on my wall. I had a No Fear poster on my wall. I remember this very much. It was a white poster with the No Fear logo on it, but the No Fear logo kind of had an American flag type effect to it, which is fun because I was very much into American culture at the time. I still am. But I was a skateboarder, rollerblader, BMXer, and I was doing every extreme sport under the sun when I was that age. And I had cut out from all of the magazines, from all of those sports, and snowboarding as well, from all of those sports, I just cut out things that really interested me and I plastered them all over my walls. So, you know, magazine sized posters, blue tacked all over my walls and all over my ceilings as well. The entire room was covered in these extreme sports references. So, yeah.
If you were stuck on a deserted island during an apocalypse, what would be the one book you want to have to read for pleasure? It could be a book, it could be a comic book, graphic novel, whatever you want.
It just has to be Lord of the Rings, I think. That's a real foundational piece of my inception into storytelling. I've probably read that once a year since I was about 14, just because I love that story. And I think it comes from a real sincere place. Tolkien storytelling. And even though he doesn't think that it's an allegory of what was happening at the time, it probably was, like subconsciously. And it's got a lot of lessons in there. And although it's in retrospect now, in comparison to something like Game of Thrones, it's very kind of binary in that, you know, the goodies are the goodies and the baddies are the baddies. Whereas in Game of Thrones, you know, the goodies are the baddies and the baddies are the goodies and everybody's grey and everything, which is great, which is fantastic. But I just love the goodies are the goodies and the baddies are the baddies in some respects as well. So that'd definitely be the one book that I'd take with me. But if I was to take a comic book or novel, it'd have to be the complete collection of Invincible.
Well, you got into comics in the past 5 years or so, and it turned you on when you read The Walking Dead and the Invincible rather. And if someone was not a reader of comics, and I know plenty of people who are, what would you suggest they read that might get them interested? Not knowing what their interests are, what book do you think would turn someone on to comics?
Yeah, I think Invincible is a good place to start, potentially. And I'd probably categorize this into maybe a couple. So Invincible would be great for guys, I reckon, to start them off for the most part. And then, and young guys as well, sorry, rather. And I think that more for older people, I think The Walking Dead would be a better place to start. And because it's just, you got one consistent story that goes on for a long time, I think that's a really good way to do it.
So Kirkman's the guy.
Yeah, I'm a terrible Kirkman fanboy in that respect, which is really bad. I know, it's just, it's so cookie cutter, isn't it? But yeah, those are really the two that I think would be the best place to start.
Okay. Well, when you're reading your comics, what is your beverage of choice to relax and read?
Yeah, I'm a coffee guy. So just coffee and milk, really. Mm-hmm. Just a white coffee for me, sitting on my sofa.
Now, what would be your guilty pleasure? And people have said to me, well, I don't feel guilty about it, and that's fine. But I mean, that's something that could be perceived as a guilty pleasure, kind of a time waster, but you really like doing it.
My guilty pleasure, I think, is unashamedly rewatching The Office and Parks and Recreation. And although, you know, they're critically acclaimed sitcoms, obviously, and they're fantastic, but the fact that I've repeatedly watched them, it just feels like it's a guilty pleasure in a way, you know, because I know what's coming.
Right.
I know what's coming. Like, and I kind of feel guilty about that, and the fact that I should expand my horizons. Mm-hmm. I should probably be reading more comics as well, even though I'm rewatching The Office for the upteenth time. But yeah, that would definitely be my guilty pleasure.
And do you have a pet peeve, a big pet peeve, something that people do or something that happens that just gets under your skin? Because I have plenty.
What really gets under my skin is people thinking that they know what they're talking about. Like absolutely, absolutism kind of gets on my nerves a lot. And just a lack of humility, I think, because it just really frustrates me when somebody isn't listening to you, even though, you know, you're trying to get your point across, but they're not going to listen, and they know best straight off the bat. The creeping absolutism that is becoming more and more prominent in society, I think.
So no open mind. They have their talking points. They're going to stick to them and just repeat them until they wear you down or you walk away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It can be very frustrating. But yeah, that's a pet peeve, definitely.
Now, how about a missed opportunity? And it doesn't have to be comics. It could be anything in your life. You're like, oh, that was the moment. I should have taken advantage of it.
Yeah, when I was younger, again, about 13, 14, I was a very busy lad when I was that young. I used to play for a basketball team called the Thames Valley Tigers. So the area that I was living in was called Thames Valley, which is just outside of London. It's, you know, where the Thames begins before it goes into London. But anyway, I used to play for them when I was younger. And they're essentially in the NBA version over here. So I guess it kind of be the equivalent of, you know, being in the junior Charlotte Hornets or something like that. And although obviously the level is far below, you know, the junior team of the Charlotte Hornets, obviously. But anyway, you know, it was good for me. But I didn't fully appreciate that opportunity. I think I could have definitely made a lot more of the training, and I could have really gone for it if I wanted, but I think I was distracted elsewhere.
I had one back in high school, and there was a chance to go to Paris on a trip with the French class. And I also wanted an electric guitar. My parents said, you have to decide which one. I said, oh, I want the electric guitar, which I chose. And I played for a while, and not very well. And now I'm like, I really wish I'd gone to Paris. I've never been to Europe, and that was my opportunity, and I blew it. So I'd still have those memories.
Well, if you ever do make it. Have you been to Paris since?
I have not been to Europe. My wife has been to France and Spain, and she wants to get back there. She traveled during college. I did not, and I should have.
You'll always be welcome here. You'll have a place to
stay. Thank you.
No worries.
It sounds great. Do you recall a time when you took a risk? A big risk for you. And with some of your high intensity sports, I can see you taking a lot of physical risks.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, I was taking risks on a daily basis with all of that. But that was like physical. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's all kind of calculated risk, because you're kind of trying to push your physical boundaries, and you know your physical boundaries a little bit. Although, you know, sometimes you do push yourself and end up with a broken arm, but you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. kind of in life at large, I think actually doing that first Kickstarter was a really big risk.
Yeah,
I think. I don't think I fully appreciated it at the time as well, that like of how big of a risk it was. But yeah, thankfully it paid off. Sometimes it pays to to take the risk, I guess. And even if you fail, you know, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You just got to get back on the horse, regroup, and think about how you can do it better the next time, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really good advice. Don't give up.
No, never. And that's the one thing that I really appreciate in the US, is the real drive to get back up again and try again. Because in the UK, there's a little less enthusiasm for doing that. Definitely, I think.
Really?
So people are okay, generally okay with failing. That's fine. But then they won't try again, generally. There's more heightened attitude in the US to try, doesn't matter if you fail, get back up again type of attitude. Although, you know, we're very good trying to keep calm and carry on. But there's not so much an attitude of try again.
I would not have known that. I would not have picked up. But I definitely see the calm determination and more of a calm approach to things in England than here. A little more reserved. That's just my impression. Maybe it's just watching too many TV shows.
I think that's generally true, having lived in both countries. But there's pros and cons to that, isn't there, in many aspects of life. So where it can be a positive in one scenario, it's a negative in another.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Samuel, you are determined and have done a great job with Milford Green, and now with the S Factor coming out through Action Lab Comics. So that's coming up in June. Please check that out. It's a very good comic. It's a 4-issue series. Will there be more? I'm not going to say, because I don't want to spoil anything. I'll let you read and decide. Should there be? Could there be? It's at the end. We don't know. I don't want to give it away. Definitely check that out. And Comics for the Apocalypse. Samuel, thank you so much for being on Creator Talks.
Honestly, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, folks. Coming up next, the interview I've been teasing for a while. The creative couple, writer Paul Tobin and artist Colleen Coover. They are the creators of Bandette, the French teenage cat burglar. You have seen her comics on Comixology through Monkey Brain Comics, and also now it is published through Dark Horse Comics, both in hardcover and now in softcover. In the spotlight is Bandette Volume 4, The Six Finger Secret. So I discuss with Colleen and Paul the origin of the comic and their experience living in France, which brings a certain je ne sais quoi to their comic. We also talk about their comic book reading and their original art collection, which it just so happens to be instrumental in developing their storytelling skills. And of course, being Creator Talks, I ask them how they met, what is their origin story, and my final 9 questions, among them that pet peeve and the time they took a risk. If you had listened to my last podcast, I said I wonder if it's time for a change for Creator Talks. And I've been soliciting your feedback through polls on social media. I've been giving much thought to how I want to do things in the future, and I will be announcing that in my next podcast with Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. That interview will be in 2 weeks on a Thursday, so in the meantime, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and or Instagram at Creator Talks Pod, where I post my Saturday and Sunday Silver and Bronze Age comics, and sometimes Copper Age comics, and sometimes just other little fun things I like to post. And you can reach me directly through my email address, creatortalks@gmail.com. That's creatortalks@gmail.com. As you know, this show is available on practically every podcast catcher, including YouTube, and you can go to creatortalks.com to listen to all of my podcasts and share them with someone who loves comics and comic book creators. The impact that you can have on the show by sharing it with others and spreading the word can be great and is greatly appreciated, as are those reviews on Apple Podcasts. That is all the time I have for this installment of Creator Talks. For those of you who have taken the time to listen, thank you so much. For Creator Talks, this has been your host, Christopher Calloway. Until next time.